23. A Shortcut Through the Sky. As they reached the ranch house, Modo felt his lower lip sag. The hunch on his back was slowly rising, and that made his stomach tighten. He couldn't stop it. He pulled on Tharpa's shoulder and signaled him to follow. The two went around the corner of the house as the others walked inside.
"I am," Modo whispered, "losing my shape, and I forgot my mask."
"Ah, young Sahib. Unfortunate.
I don't have any way of covering my face."
"There are only friends inside. You don't have to fear displaying your appearance to them."
"I don't want Octavia to see me this way," Modo said,
embarrassed that he was forced to confess it. Tharpa nodded and placed his hand on Modo's shoulder for a moment before answering,
"Then we will solve this."
He reached up and unraveled his turban, revealing shoulder-length dark hair streaked with grey. He carefully wrapped the cloth around Modo's face so that only his eyes were showing.
"Undo the collar buttons on your shirt, but keep your coat on. That will hide your shape."
"But are you allowed to do this?"
Even though they had shared a cabin, Modo had never seen Tharpa without his turban.
"I mean, isn't your turban a religious symbol?"
"I am among friends, and if it is in aid of a friend, then I am allowed to remove it."
He paused.
"But be warned. I am told that English women go mad over men with long hair."
They enjoyed a laugh together, then went into the ranch house. Mr. Socrates, Mrs. Finchley, and Octavia were seated at a rough-hewn wooden table. Mr. Socrates looked askance at Modo and Tharpa, but made no comment. Octavia stared at Modo's mummified head, then even longer at Tharpa's hair. Perhaps Tharpa hadn't been joking about English women. Modo carefully brushed the dirt off one of the stools, which got a derisive chuckle out of Octavia.
"Always neat, aren't you?" she whispered.
Modo sat down and crossed his arms.
"So you've decided to join us," Mr. Socrates chided.
He unrolled a colourful map of Australia across the table. "We're going to fly the Queensland rainforest." He pointed at the northeast part of the country. "By ship, we'd need 6 days of sailing along the coast. But we'll take a shortcut through the sky. At 25 knots per hour, more if the wind is in our favour. We'll be there within 3 days. Why, we'll even have time to stop in Brisbane for pineapple, if we so desire. I have a few notes about the geography of the area from my friend John Atherton, a cattleman and an explorer. It will be the easiest crossing of the Australian jungle in history. We shall have tea and cakes 3 times a day, far above the earth."
"It sounds marvellous,"
Octavia exclaimed. She clapped Modo on the shoulder.
"Imagine that, Modo. We'll be soaring like eagles."
He swallowed.
"Yes, imagine that."
The idea of being above the earth had always appealed to him, so long as he was holding on to a building. But now they wouldn't be attached to anything at all. The Royal Geographical Society would, if they learned of it, be quite envious of our flight, Mr. Socrates said. This trip across the continent would take explorers on foot or horseback months.
"How will we find the temple?"
Octavia asked. "My hope is that we'll spot it from the air, though I realize that's unlikely. The rainforest is particularly dense. Assuming the map Fred Land provided to us is accurate, we should be able to tether the ship to a palm tree and climb down near the temple. If we're lucky, we'll only have to search on foot for a few hours. Any more questions?"
"I hope you don't expect me to ride in that contraption," Mrs. Finchley huffed, her arms crossed.
"No, my dear Mrs. Finchley," Mr. Socrates answered. "You shall remain in Sydney for the next fortnight or so, longer if necessary. I've already paid for a room at the Occidental Hotel, which you'll find much more to your liking. I've also taken the liberty of purchasing tickets for you to the Theatre Royal. For a colony, they do have rather good shows. Though I don't recommend any of the comedies. A little too common, if you get my meaning."
"You mean belches and farts,"
Octavia said.
"How pleasant, Octavia,"
Mr. Socrates said. "Mrs. Finchley, please make a note to stamp the last vestiges of the Cockney attitude out of Octavia upon our return voyage." He wasn't smiling. "Well, if there are no further questions, it's time to see how they're progressing with our airship." They followed him outside, where Lizzie was still ordering the men around as they pulled ropes and fit together various mechanical pieces. Modo was glad to see that the car of the airship was as long as a large rowboat and made of thick wicker. Three men were placing an engine in the aft section of the car. "We have the Clockwork Guild to thank for this," Mr. Socrates said.
"How so?"
Modo asked. "Twice they've used balloons or dirigibles, once when they attacked the Houses of Parliament and again on the Wyvern. It's important to learn from your enemies. It got me thinking about the possibilities of air travel. So I sought the advice of several inventive military scientists, and, with a little of my own tweaking, we've designed this ship.
I've done some reading, Mr. Socrates, about the Montgolfier brothers and their balloons,"
Modo said, hoping to impress his master.
"Which gas will you use?"
"Hydrogen, of course. Yes, it's extremely flammable, but I can't make helium out of thin air."
"But how will we ascend and descend?"
Modo asked.
"Ah, you have studied up."
Mr. Socrates pointed at the red balloon. "I used your descriptions of the Actinio as inspiration. As you'll no doubt remember, the submarine ship had two hulls to prevent sea pressure from crushing it. So there will be a balloon inside a balloon. When we need to descend, we allow gas to escape from the outside balloon. When we decide to climb to the heavens, we fill the outside balloon again."
"So you let out the gas to go down,"
Octavia said.
"That sounds rather flatulent."
"I won't even dignify that with a response, Octavia. It's the cutting edge of aeronautic science. With a steam-powered engine and enough compressed coal, we'll be able to travel to our destination and back without resupplying."
He pointed at the framework the men were now assembling, which Modo assumed would house the balloons.
"I've dubbed it the Prince Albert, after the Queen's departed spouse. If she actually knew about us and our association, she would be honoured, I'm sure. Tomorrow, our little adventure will begin," he continued, "and you, my friends, will be the first to see this country from the car of a steam-powered airship. We are making history, though no one but us will know of it. Now, come along, back to our quarters. We'll need a good rest. I'm afraid sleeping arrangements on the Prince Albert will be rather dreadful."
He paused. "Oh, and don't overeat. We'll be weighing you in the morning to plan for ballast." Then he laughed in a way that made him seem 10 years younger.